not only through his creative power, but also his continual separation of a people onto himself, beautifully set up the chapter 12 for us. And I just wanted to mention that we had left off in Haran, and that is where Abram and his family and his father are located. Terah is his father, as Jeff had mentioned. And Genesis 12 takes us from a situation where Abram separates. He essentially does this in Genesis 11. He separates from his father. He hears a call from God and begins this journey from Haran into Canaan. And so we can go through, I've got a little figure there of Abram. It's a long journey. Let's take, just to kind of visually take us to where we're going to go tonight, from Haran or Haran, Abram goes to Shechem. He goes into the land of Canaan as far as Shechem. And then ultimately he goes a little bit farther to a point between Bethel and Ai. You can only see Bethel on this map. And then finally he goes to the Negev, the southern part of Canaan. So just as a visual, this is where we're going tonight. This is the NIV, the not official version of the chapel, but I'm going to read from the New King James tonight. I'll just leave that up for a second, but let's look at the first three verses tonight of Genesis chapter 12, and I've got the New King James, and it says this. Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So I'd like to put this away now. Okay, I just want to get rid of this graphic here. Apologize. Okay, so when we are looking at Genesis 12, it's important to keep in mind that Genesis is a book that Moses has written, and he's written to the Exodus Jews, and he wants to point out, remind them that they're the children of Israel, they're the apple of God's eye, and to remind them of where they came from, and that it is God who has separated a people to himself, the Israelites. In this narrative here, in the first portion that we're going to take a look at, the direction of the book of Genesis changes now. In this, we learn that Abram was taken out of a pagan land. He was given amazing and astounding promises made directly to him. And these promises are later formalized in the Abrahamic covenant. So when we're looking at the nation of Israel, there are four covenants that we're really dealing with ultimately. The Abrahamic covenant, which is a promise that God makes that Abraham, eventually father of all nations, will have children that are greater than the sand of the seashore, or the grains of sand in the seashore, or the stars in the sky. The next covenant that is promised to Israel is the Palestinian covenant, a specific land that will be given to them and never taken away. And then the third covenant would be the Davidic covenant, where someone from the line of David will always sit on the throne. And then finally, the new covenant, which is where God promises to Israel that he will write his laws on the stony tablets of their hearts. So we're dealing with the first covenant now. This is an unconditional covenant, a covenant that God, swearing upon himself, makes with Abram. And the condition, the condition is faith, entering into that by faith. So the passage also points out that the faith of Abram is displayed by obeying God, and this is God-pleasing faith. So let's take a review once again of the three verses that I read. Abram, when we begin this portion that we're looking at, when he's in Haran, he is a middle-aged man, 75 years old. He was prosperous. He was settled in Haran with his father and other people that were with him. And he's completely pagan. So effectively, there's no reason for him to leave. He's got it good, you could say. And then he hears a call from God. We're not told how this call occurs, but he hears a call from God and he obeys. Let me just read the first three verses once again. Now the Lord said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. Verse 2, I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. Verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So once again, the key point here is the word of the Lord came to him. We don't know how. He responded by faith. Obediently, he left everything and followed God, Yahweh, here. The key point is that is why he is called the epitome of faith, the greatest example of faith, effectively. There are some glowing things that are said in the Bible about Abram, some incredible things. Let's turn to a couple of these verses. This is John chapter 8, verse 56. In this particular case, Jesus is having a very intense conversation with the religious leaders who are very, very difficult to work with. And at one point in this verse, he says, your father Abraham, who you revere and hold out as a great example of one of the greatest Jews who have ever lived, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Jesus says this in contrast to these religious leaders who demonstrated no faith at all and completely put their faith in being able to observe the law and to earn a righteousness. Here is Romans chapter 4, verse 13. For the promise that he would be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. There are several other verses that I would just like to look at very quickly. There's a block of verses in chapter 4 of Romans 16 through 24. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. Verse 16 of Romans 4 says, therefore it is of faith that it might be according to grace, so that the promise might be sure to all the seed, not only to those who are of the law, but also to those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. Finally, let's take a look at Galatians chapter 3, verses 6 through 9. You don't have to turn there. I just wanted to read, just to give us an idea of how great Abraham really is. It says, just as Abraham believed God and was accounted to him for righteousness, therefore know that only those who are of faith are sons of Abraham. Verse 8, Galatians 3, and the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, in you all the nations shall be blessed. So then those who are of faith are blessed with believing Abraham. There's a couple more verses that we can return to, but Abraham is thought of in a great manner, in a great way, because of the faith that he displayed. Let's look at the religious and historical context of this passage here. The point of the passage is the call of Abraham to a new nation. Here's the learning point for us. Israel would learn that her very existence was God's work, and through a man who responded by faith, leaving for Canaan, he would display this. So another key point would be what would convince them that they're calling to leave Egypt and go to Canaan? Or I should say this, Moses speaking to the Israelites, when he first came on the scene for them, he was to deliver this people from Egypt. And if we think about the task at hand, we have the nation of Egypt, whose very engine of the economy is the children of Israel. They're getting free labor. They apparently did a good job. Moses comes on the scene and tells Pharaoh, let my people go. And of course, Pharaoh had zero incentive to make this happen. So as Moses is teaching the children of Israel, he could reach back and look at the example of Abraham and point out that Abraham's display of faith was as great as their display of faith in leaving Egypt. He left Haran and went to Canaan, and they are to leave Egypt and go back to Canaan. And so Abraham, again, is this excellent example, a man who responds by faith and leaves for Canaan. So what would convince them of their calling to leave Egypt and go to Canaan? The message is that God worked through Abram. He responded by faith, and Hebrews 11 verse 8 says, and he went out not knowing where he was going. So verses 1 through 3, we've got the record of God's call to Abram. Now let's look at verses 4 through 9, and we see Abram's obedience. Let me just read these verses here. Again, I've got the New King James. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Verse 6, Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah, and the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants will I give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. And then finally, verse 9, so Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. Here we have an example of Abram's obedience, and there are really two imperatives that are stated here in these verses. An imperative is a command to do something. So the first imperative, in looking at these imperatives, each imperative is linked to subsequent promises. So if the imperative is carried forward, promises follow. So imperative number one is literally get out of your country. Imperative two is be a blessing, literally be a blessing. And it says you shall, and King James says you shall be a blessing. It's not, it literally says you will be a blessing by doing these things. So the key point is that Abram's leaving started a chain of reactions. If Abram would get out of Ur, God would do three things for him. So it's so that he could be a blessing in the land, imperative two. So to leave, then imperative two happens, right? And he had to be that blessing so that God would do three more things for him. So we can notice the symmetry here, the comparison of these two groups of three here. The meaning is strengthened by observing that Abraham's calling had a purpose. His obedience would bring great blessing. These three promises were based on God's call for Abraham to leave the land. So what are these three blessings or promises? Number one, to be a great nation. Number two, to be a blessing for Abram personally. And then three, that God would give him a great name. So these promises would then enable Abram to be a blessing, imperative two. Based on his obedience, God's three promises are as follows. Number one, to bless those who bless him. Number two, to curse anyone who would treat him badly. And then number three, bless the families of the earth through Abram. So this takes on its greatest fulfillment in the fact that Jesus Christ ultimately fulfilled that third promise to bless the families of the earth through Abram. So Romans chapter 9, verse 5 says this, of whom are the fathers and from whom according to the flesh Christ came, who is over all the eternally blessed God. Amen. So unfortunately, many times God had to use other nations to discipline Israel. But because of this, you know, certainly there are some rough times for Israel. But because I guess we could say then, God is faithful to his promises, even when Israel was not faithful to them themselves. Let's continue here. So Abram was told to leave several things. He's told to leave his country. He's told to leave his people and his father's household, verse 1. But he was told nothing about the land that he was going to. This departure involved really a magnificent display of faith. And we'll just keep saying that throughout this chapter here. It's that display of faith to go to a land that he knew nothing about that really marks Abram out. let's summarize again. To bless or to curse Abram would be to bless or curse Abraham's God. The themes of blessing and cursing are really brought forth here in chapter 12, and they're played out through the book of Genesis here. So we can really say that verses 1 through 3 are really the central passage of the book of Genesis, this promise that's made to Abram. Here, we finally get this program that we're looking for in the first 11 chapters of Genesis. We get this, this desperately needed program in the first 11 chapters. All of those chapters serve to show that a blessing was needed. This was the call. Abraham responded to it in faith, and then the promises made to him become formalized in Genesis 15 with the covenant that the Lord has with Abram and is symbolized by the animals that are cut in half and the graphic display of God's faithfulness to this promise. Let's look at, once again, a summary of verses 4 through 9. The scriptures say that Abram obeyed, Lot went with him, he was 75 years old. His obedience is recounted in two ways in this line, in this the second imperative that's given. He left, verse 4, he was a blessing, verses 5 through 9. And let's take a look at a couple of the specific details here in verses 5 through 9. Verse 5, then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran. And they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. There are people mentioned here that were acquired in Haran. Maybe this is an example of Abram, who understands God's calling with the light that was given to him, and probably the first time that he actually preached a gospel message. Perhaps he told these people about the God of Yahweh and the importance of following him. And if this is the case, it appears that people listened and went along with Abram as he entered into the land of Canaan. Another important point is that Abram built altars. The first, he built an altar in Shechem in verse 6, and he built another one east of Bethel in verse 8. At Bethel, he called on the name of the Lord. So this second location is very important here. He made a proclamation in Bethel, or the point between Bethel and Ai. He proclaimed Yahweh's name. He said the name of the God that had called him. In Genesis 21, verses 33, it says this, then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called in the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. Genesis 26, verses 25 says this, so he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. God now had, the key point is that God had a witness in the land of Canaan. Verse 6 notes that they were in the land, the Canaanites were in the land, and it mentions the fact of this great tree in Morah, the terebinth tree of Morah. And it's significant because most probably the Canaanites had a shrine there, a cult worship shrine. And right in the midst of that, Abram builds this altar and calls on the Lord. So we have this display of faith and maturity of faith to a certain extent, and Abram begins to obey God and to witness in this pagan land, this land of Canaan. At Shechem, God appears to Abram. He confirms the promise. And he rewards Abraham's faith. He says, to your descendants, I will give this land. Verse 7. Abraham arrived in the land. God showed it to him. But it would be given to his offspring, not him. Now, me being in real estate, I would like to know, you know, kind of what Abraham was able to get here. And it turns out when he dies, the only thing he really owns is a cave in a field in Ephron. That's the only thing that he really owns. And what is remarkable about Abram is that he spends his life waiting for this promise to be fulfilled. the land that has been given to him, but he never sees it. Only his descendants do. So in summary, after God confirms his promise, Abram lived in the land, waiting for the promise. But the Canaanites had all the good real estate. They had the good fertile land. When we find Abram journeying in stages toward the great Negev, this is the southern part of Israel. This is the desert part which borders Egypt. Abram, again, never really owns any of the land, or I should say it's been given to him, but he never possesses any of it. And he eventually makes his way down to this barren desert in the Negev. The Negev actually is the area that in the 1980s was revealed to contain Israel's, the facility that was building, that was enriching uranium for Israel. It was exposed, I think it was the mid 80s that Israel had the bomb. And there was, I can't remember if it was an activist or an Israeli soldier technician that revealed to the world that Israel had the bomb. They neither confirm nor deny that, but that's the area that it was chosen to have that facility, just a barren land. So for Israel, the call of their great patriarch demonstrated that he was an heir to the promise. The promise was to make a great nation. The promise included a land, a divine blessing, sovereign protection. And Yahweh's appearance and confirmation in verse 7 proved that Canaan was their destiny. God demanded a response by faith if this generation were to share in these promised blessings. And faith, as it's demonstrated here, takes God at his word and obeys him. So let's look at the second part of this chapter, verses 10 through 20. The journey here is kind of the journey that is displayed in verses 10 through 20 is much more than an example of a lesson in telling the truth. It does an effective job of describing how God can intervene even when Abram acts in a way that is seems to beyond the path of negating the promise that's given to him. So let's read these verses together here, verses 10 through 20. Again, I've got the New King James here. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. Verse 11, and it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, this is my wife. I'm sorry, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Verse 13, please say that you are my sister, that it will be well for me for your sake, and that you may that I may live because of you. Verse 14, so it was when Abram came to Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. Verse 16, he treated Abram well for her sake. She had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. He had these things. Verse 17, but the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. Verse 18, and Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. So we have here, we're going to just kind of review these recorded events here. These verses place these are placed right after Abraham's great call of obedience and faith, and then I should say faith, which led to obedience. But in this part, Abraham's not really walking by faith as he had in the beginning. God makes promises to him and states that God will keep them. It's an example of God rescuing one of the patriarchs. It's not the first time that this is going to happen in Genesis, but let's look at the first kind of first three verses here, 10 through 13. So here we find Abram cooking up a scheme. This is the result of fear. The scheme turns against him, and it seems as if God's promises to him might be jeopardized because of his I guess, knuckleheaded scheme that he comes up with. Also, it seems to be a kind of standard operating procedure with Abram that he is going to state several other times that she is my sister, and then the trouble that results from that. So two times in Genesis, Abram states that Sarai is his sister, and then his son Isaac also copies this type of behavior too. Genesis 20 verse 13 says, "And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, Sarai, this is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place, wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother." So this is the scheme he cooks up. Abram finds himself in the midst of a famine. He decides to go to Egypt temporarily. He doesn't have plans to settle down there, but he's just seeking, you know, relief from this famine. Famines also, as we're going to find out, have occurred two additional times in Genesis, one time in Isaac's day and one time in Joseph's day. Abram can't really be faulted for leaving Canaan, but there isn't, again, any indication that he's walking by faith. Here, I just as a personal note, this scheme that he cooks up is probably one of the greatest examples of mansplaining that we're going to see in the Bible. If you don't know what mansplaining is, it's an informal noun. The definition would be the explanation of something by a man, typically to a woman or to Pharaoh, in a manner regarded as condescending or patronizing or downright stupid, mansplaining. Mansplaining at its core is what occurs when a man talks condescendingly to someone, especially a woman, about something he has incomplete knowledge of, with the mistaken assumption that he knows more about it than the person he's talking to. So we would use this sentence like, we would use in a sentence like this: your response is classic mansplaining. Modern day offshoots of mansplaining can also be seen in these examples: not wanting to accept directions when you're driving with your spouse, using a bowl to cut the children's hair to save a few bucks, or taking out the garbage and then claiming that you've cleaned the whole house and that your job is done for the day. This is just some humor here, mansplaining. So anyway, back to Abram. The Bible Knowledge Commentary states what Abraham did like this. This is a Bedouin scheme he concocted to speak a half-truth about his sister's wife. This is a subtle way to ease his conscience. She was indeed his half-sister, so he tells the Egyptians only what he wants them to know. His motive is pure self-preservation. So the thinking, it seems, on Abram's part is that in enemy territory, a husband could be killed because of his wife. If she could be seen as his relative, not as his wife, he might buy himself some time or be able to negotiate with the party that wants to take the wife and therefore kind of make his situation better. So in verses 14 through 16, what we find ironically is that the person that takes an interest in his wife really doesn't have to negotiate with him. He can take her by force. But ultimately, Abram becomes enriched because of this scheme. So Pharaoh wants to take Sarai, and he effectively enriches Abram. If we look at what he gains in the process, we look to verse 16. Pharaoh treated Abram well for her sake. He was given sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. And most probably Hagar came along with that. So if you think about what this scheme kind of would have done, Sarai would have been taken from him, thus jeopardizing the promise that God gave to Abram. He would have had Hagar most likely carried on the line through the slave wife, and the child of promise might not have ever been born. So he finds himself in this predicament that he can't really get out of. And lo and behold, God intervenes. Verse 17, the Lord plagues Pharaoh and his house with diseases. God's intervention prevents Sarai from being added to Pharaoh's harem and of course, from harming her, certainly in the process. ultimately, Pharaoh rebukes Abram in verse 18. The Egyptians are very superstitious, of course. These plagues occur and it scares them. And he basically gives this imperative to Abram: get out, leave Egypt. And then he assigns some of his men to make sure that this happens. Abram leaves, he gets all the stuff that Pharaoh gives him. And effectively, we can note the similarity here. God says to Abram, leave your country and go. And Pharaoh says to Abram, take her and go your way. So we have this parallel here, essentially. There's a couple of other parallels that we can notice too. God delivers his patriarchal family from the Egyptians by means of plagues. And this mirrors the future Exodus experience for the Israelites, right? God plagues Pharaoh through 10 plagues, 10 devastating plagues, effectively destroying every single god that they've made up through these plagues, and then dealing this body blow finally to the Egyptians by killing the firstborn son. If you remember from that account, it says that there were screams that were let out on that day that the sons were born, such as none had ever been heard before. It's God really, really affected the Egyptians, and effectively in this bloodless rebellion, Egypt allows the Israelites to go, enriches them, and pushes them right out of the country. So Abram at first prospers because of his deception, but all of those riches could have interfered with God's plan. It's very interesting what his scheme cost Abram. Let's take a look at a conclusion here. Let's conclude a little bit because of time here. Moses would have his readers learn of God's gracious protection and his plan. Moses would have his readers learn or to consider God's graciousness with the Israelites. There is divine intervention and deliverance. He would also have them learn the foolishness of trying to deliver themselves from difficult situations by deceit. And if we look at this chapter in general, as I mentioned in the beginning, as Moses is talking to the Israelites about leaving the nation of Israel, he points back to this great man, Abram, who later becomes Abraham, the father of all nations here. And it's such an example of faith and sticks out to such in such a great way that really for all generations to come, we can study this and marvel at this man who did this, who simply placing his faith in God. Let's read Hebrews 11 verses 8 through 19 here. I think this is very important to read here. It says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Verse 10, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, in him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. Verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. Verse 15, and truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had came out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Well, let's conclude in a word of prayer as we look at this amazing chapter and in this short time that we've had together here. So, Father, we just give you thanks and praise as we consider these verses here. It's just astounding that you would work through a man to accomplish such a great thing, this covenant that you made, and to have Israel bless the world, Lord, ultimately. And as it says in Romans 3, to them were given the oracles of God. You entrusted your word to them. You gave them everything that they needed to approach you. And Father, you were faithful even when they were not faithful to you. So we give you thanks. We give you praise tonight as we continue in fellowship. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Ray. Very nicely done.